Trigger on!
Welcome, D-Roll, to the Dark Fate Diaries. We are World Trigger Read-Through Podcast aiming to discuss the World Trigger manga volume by volume. I'm Wensdale Cheddar.
And I'm Hoven with an H, and this month we will be discussing Volume 3 of the World Trigger manga, which covers chapters 17 to 25 of the manga, and episodes 9 to 13 of the anime.
Yay!
What have you been up to?
I have been up to feeling completely awful. How about you?
I, in these trying times, for whatever reason, decided to watch Grave of the Fireflies for the first time last night. If you're of delicate temperament at the moment, maybe steer clear. For some reason, I'm a weird psycho and I was fine. But very, very powerful movie. Easily my favourite of Takahata's.
Yeah, I totally get watching emotional movies in emotionally trying times. I've watched that, but you know when I watched it?
When?
Only once. As bonus movie watch through pod from Weekly Manga Recap.
Oh.
It was an April Fool's episode where they were just commenting on it as if it were a comedy.
Oh my gosh. The one that I gave, the Patreon bonus I really wanted to get from them that I don't know if still exists is their review of the last Naruto the movie, because that movie is, that's an interesting case. It's like half a decent movie and then the other half is laughable.
If that's a movie commentary, then it should be up for everyone, not just patrons.
I'll give that a look then. I like how you managed to, even though I tried to steer away from it, you managed to steer my how are you doing back into a how are you doing.
For today's agenda, we are going to do a quick recap of the third volume, give our general thoughts on the chapters that we've read, do some random observations as usual, then of course do a spoiler corner, and after that, answer a few of your questions.
I mean, I'm pretty sure all of our questions this week concern our thoughts on the current manga, so I feel like we can just bunch that in with spoiler corner.
Alright then, so if that sounds good, let's get to the summary.
Yes, let's.
From Chapter 17, where we last left off, Border's Commander Kido was ordering the talented Ace Jin to capture our neighbour refugee Yuma. In the meantime, Chika leads Yuma to an abandoned Shinto shrine she uses as a hideout to ask him what happens when neighbours kidnap people with high Trion, and then trying to find out what might have happened to her friend and her brother. We find out the neighbor world has different countries, and as Yuma sees through Chika's fear of relying on other people, he nonchalantly admits that he worries about Osama's career because he involved him and Chika, but Chika herself thinks Osama wouldn't mind being involved. The tension of whether Jin will go after Yuma, as he himself admits, is the only border agents he knows he'd have trouble with as another Black Trigger user, is quickly resolved, as Jin refuses the order. Since as a branch agent, only Tamakoma branch director Rindo can give him direct orders, Jin manipulates the conversation so that Rindo can give him a window of opportunity to use a non-lethal method on Yuma. Despite the staff's protests, Shinoda agrees to leave it to Jin, but before they can head off, Kurosawa stops Osama to say, "I played rugby in college!" Which, of course, in Kurosawa's language, translates to, "What are Yuma's motives for coming here? Collecting resources is my thing, so I want to negotiate with him." But of course, he just said, "I played rugby in college!" So Osama had it translated. After Osama reveals that his last name is Kuga, Yuma's, not Osama's, everyone is shocked, and we come to Yuma explaining to Chika that he's dead, that his dad is dead, and that he's come here expecting help, but contrary to what his dad said, everyone wants him dead here. Osama finds out that Yuma's dad was one of Border's founding members and is tasked with finding out if that's really the case. Jin explains to Osama Border's basically three factions. If you want to find out more about them, I've written a whole video essay about it, link in the description. But basically, there are xenophobes led by Kido, and they are mostly in the HQ. There are centrists led by Shinoda, who just want to retain the status quo and defend the city. And there are hippies in the Tamakoma branch who just want everyone to get along, man. So Kido and the Conserva Squad decide to still capture Yuma so that he doesn't tip the scales, allowing Tamakoma to have two black triggers on hand. They'll wait for the top three A-rank squads to return from away missions, and then employ them and Miwa Squad to catch him. Then Jin catches Yuma the simplest method he knows. He offers him a job as a Tamakoma branch agent, and Yuma agrees to check the base out, as long as Osama and Chika come along. They arrive to the rundown base on the river, and are greeted by Yotaro, a child riding a capybara, who immediately proposes to Chika, and Shiori, Milo's best girl, who feeds them dorayaki. Chika takes up interest in who is allowed on away missions, and Shiori tells her they're selected from A-rank agents, which leads to Chika accepting her job offer. Meanwhile, Yuma loses interest in Border after he finds out his dad's friend is also dead, living on in Jin's black trigger. He thinks he wants to go back to the neighbor world, but Jin's like, "Dude, it's chapter 20, high time you revealed your backstory." And reveal it he does. Osama and Jin find out that 4 years ago, he and his dad were fighting in the neighbor wars, helping out his dad friends in different countries. And everything went well until, well, Yuma died. Well, one time he got cocky, he sneaked out and got destroyed with facts and logic by a humanoid Trion soldier we haven't seen since. His dad sacrificed himself to create a black trigger that would seal his body and create a new one. Just as his dad was waking up, Yugo crumbled into dust and died. Yuma fought some more, but was left without a goal in his life. Replica told him he could get his original body back in Border, but he headed there not to resurrect himself, but his dad instead. Now that he knows that's not possible, Yuma no longer has a reason to live. And so Osamu decides to give him one. Giggity. Chika wants to join Border, even if there is only a small chance for her to join the away mission and find her brother. So Osamu asks him to join the team. So he does, after an emotional conversation in which Yuma notices Osama's similarity to his dad in the self-sacrificial nature. Chika insists Osama should be the leader, and all head to Rindo to submit the paperwork. Starting now, they are a squad. Hoven?
Shiori explains that in order to attain A rank, Kuga and Chika must first achieve B rank, then their team must participate in the Rank Wars mock battles. Jin then explains that Kuga will have to use border triggers for these battles, since not only would HQ come after his black trigger, but it's considered far too powerful to be eligible for them. They then, after some deliberation, deduce that the sniper class would fit Chika the best, due to her stamina, perseverance, and general capability to focus. Just then, the three A-rankers arrive back at the base, Kirie Konami, Kyosuke Karasuma, and Reiji Kisaki. We're then introduced to their recurring running gag of Konami being incredibly gullible, and the other characters taking advantage of this and constantly playing pranks on her that prey on this gullibility. It's then decided that each of the A-rankers will be mentoring them over the next 3 weeks. Kirie will be taking Yuma, Reiji will be looking after Chika, and Karasuma, since he's the last one without a partner, decides to take Osamu.
I'm sorry, don't you mean Scruffy Hottie and Composed Beefcake?
Yes, I was going to mention those. I do love that, and I also love the fact that Karasuma is just up front with this, "Hello, I am a Scruffy Hottie. Nice to meet you."
To me, they don't have any other names. They're just Scruffy Hottie and Composed Beefcake. That's what we're going to refer to them as.
Composed Beefcake, is that even human? Training begins. She's Chika on the shooting range, and Yuma and Osamu in what is basically the holodeck from Star Trek, or the Danger Room from X-Men. It essentially simulates the effects of Trion. Osamu performs really poorly, whereas Yuma actually manages to win a match against Kirie on his 10th Kirie. Is that how you pronounce it? Kirie?
Konami.
Yeah, manages to win a match against Konami on his 10th attempt, and Chika really impresses Kisaki with her Trion reserves. Meanwhile, the away ship finally arrives back at Border HQ. We're introduced to some of the away team's heavy hitters, and the top three in A rank, Kei Tachikawa, Soya Kazuma, and Isami Toma, as they deliver the enemy triggers picked up on their away mission. They are briefed about the goings-on of Yuma's arrival, fight with Miwa Squad, and enlistment in Tamakoma Branch, and are ordered to recover recover Yuma's trigger by force. We also learn that Yonaya and Kodera have been monitoring the Tamakoma's base. Tachikawa makes the call to carry out the mission at that very night in order to avoid Yuma learning any further techniques, and Kido assigns him command of the mission. Back at Tamakoma Branch, the three mentors reflect on their new recruits' progress before going off break to train some more. Osamu is doing notably worse than the other two. Conserva Squad closes in on the base, but is stopped in their tracks by none other than Jin. Jin informs Conserva Squad that Yuma is now a border agent, but Tachikawa dismisses this with the fact that until enlistment day, HQ does not have to acknowledge them as a team. The squad continues to try and talk him down, but to no avail, and before Hirashiyama's... What? But to no avail, before... God damn it. It's happening again! It's Jin! Why do you do this to me, Jin? The squad continue to try and talk him down, but to no avail, before Arashiyama squad arrive on the scene in support of Tamakoma, revealing that Shinoda's faction has allied with Rindo's. The two sides square off and get ready for combat. So, I guess general thoughts on this volume?
Yeah. So, chapters 18 to 20 is probably when most people come around to really liking Yuma, and to be honest, it's when I started really liking him too. His overdog status was entertaining short-term, but it took him becoming aimless for his journey to feel, well, not as aimless. When he loses his reason to live since he finds out he can't resurrect his dad, it hits hard, especially since it was his cockiness and immaturity that led to his death in the first place. And just the fact that he wasn't heading there to like, heal himself, but to essentially die just to resurrect his dad. Yuma's reserved reaction fits so well during his father's death. It's a case of less is more, as he doesn't even know how to process this. It doesn't feel like there's an element of romanticizing toxicity, since even so, Yuma's usually just a fun, bouncy, almost genderless character. And I missed this the few times, but when he makes a parallel between Osamu and his dad, Osamu's offer means more than it says on the page. It's an opportunity for Yuma to pay his dad back for his sacrifice, both a reason for him to live and a chance for his redemption. So yeah, I like these chapters quite a lot. I find them an essential reading to establish Yuma's identity as a tragic hero who could die at any minute, not knowing how much his time, his real body has left before his black trigger gives in.
The relationship between Yuma and Yugo is very unusual. Yugo has instilled a lot of care in raising Yuma, but is also very much at arm's length. The way that Yuma responds to him, he's very dedicated to him, but doesn't mourn him in the way you can typically mourn a parent. He very calmly commits to fighting the rest of the war after he passes away. He follows on from him in much more subtle ways. It very clearly looms over him large, but
It's not a trait that we notice a lot, especially in the later parts of the series, but because he's such a fun, loving character who just wants to spend the rest of his life in a fun way with his friends.
I do think it's very interesting, and it sort of speaks to this series' priorities, that this flashback for Yuma and this moment with the team formation happens now, only like on chapters 20 and 21. The series is it's very much concerned with having these characters meet in a naturalistic way and having the events then unfold that eventually gets them to this point, rather than this is the hook, this is what the series is going to be working towards right out the gate.
Yeah.
I do wonder if perhaps these events could have been moved earlier on, but I guess it's just a matter of what you want to prioritize with the story, really.
I don't know. I do prefer this than like Black Clover's approach on chapter 3. Here is your extended cast. Better get used to them.
See, where I am is like, I feel like that can be a middle ground. And a lot of series hit this, but I do find it really notable that like In the big formation of the team, Chica is the one whose goal is spearheading them. That's the objective that they're working towards, rather than either of the first two protagonists set up. That's a very different approach.
I do love this. It's honestly, this volume is a great character piece for all the three main characters. So Chica is proactive, and her decision to join Border drives the rest of the story, while Osamu reveals for his helping nature is fear of regret and fear that he'll run away at the moment or when it counts most. I can't wait for Jin getting a chance to shine in volume 4.
Yeah, it is notable that this volume is the one volume we've had so far without any protracted action in it. It's all been character establishment and finding out more about the world. But having that, the Conserva Squad, as we've dubbed them, it's a very continuous ticking clock throughout this volume that is, you know, you're constantly aware of.
I very much like how Miwa hates Tachikawa and fits with his character of Miwa hating just everyone.
Yeah, it adds a lot of nuance to him, because you just kind of, from the offset, I just kind of expect him to be like, yes, we should get rid of the evil neighbor as soon as possible. But again, the characters in World Trigger are a lot more multifaceted than that. They have personal grievances and other priorities. Kido is also another example of this, in the fact that his fear of neighbors and his concerns about the power dynamics within Border are both motivations for why he wants the Black Trigger. It's not overly simplistic about it, which I like.
At the same time, it is clear that the staff, they are concerned with the agent's safety on the away missions.
The fact that only immediate superiors can issue commands, it makes me think, like, we could get like a very, you could very easily have like a Shin Godzilla-esque incident where there's a neighbor attack, but just the sheer bureaucracy of border's goings on just gets in the way. But obviously that's not really Ayashihara's priorities, but it's a funny scenario that could be explored.
I mean, yeah, maybe it's different for you, Sassanax, because back during feudalism, your vassal's vassal was your vassal, but back here in the rest of Europe, only your immediate vassal was your vassal. So there.
we need to fetch a vessel for this vassal. Anyway, this is the first establishing of the idea of multiple other neighbor countries, as opposed to just like the neighbors as an invading force in general. And I find the architecture of the neighbor world super interesting. Like these very high-tech, futuristic weapons, but they also have these castle-like battlements with these super tall bridges on cliffs. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of these kinds of worlds.
I must admit that after reading how The Promised Neverland ends, I'm a little worried how it will affect Ashihara's writing when he gets out of his comfort zone and explore different worlds.
Honestly, I'm less worried, because he's made it very clear that he applies the same amount of care. Oh, I guess this is getting ahead a bit, so I won't. But I feel like he makes it very clear as he goes along that he has the same amount of care with regards to having lots of factions with different motivations outside for the neighbors as well. So I don't see how his writing would dramatically shift in that regard.
Okay, yeah. I guess that makes sense.
But yeah, it's crazy. This flashback leaves absolutely no impact on me in the anime at all, but in the manga, it's super impactful. Like, the image of Yugo crumbling to dust at the end. What the hell is that? That mysterious assailant that takes out Yuma? When are we going to see that again? I really want to see that again. So yeah,
we haven't seen this this kind of humanoid, hollow-like, Aranko-like Trion soldier, and I'm super curious about them. It's also nice that we get to that before we get Yuma's backstory, we also get to see him recalling his dad's three lessons as a way to kind of for the reader to kind of get used to him before that.
Yeah. So we also get the introduction of Tamakoma Branch in this volume. I absolutely love the design of Tamakoma HQ. It's very fitting with that kind of minimalist aesthetic that World Trigger has, while also having a lot of personality. It's like this, you know, it's this base that's on, it's over the water. It has lots of little bits of brick showing through, showing that it's got a bit of disrepair. It's kind of Art Deco. I really dig it. And I also love its inhabitants. We have mentioned my favorite girl, Shiori.
We've mentioned Scruffy Hottie, a gullible girl, a composed beefcake.
Yotaro could, he's one of those characters that could very easily dip into being annoying, but he always hits just the right mark for me with the comedy. Yuma meeting Yotaro was basically the duck face singularity. And I like the, if you marry me, you can pet Raijin Maru and then can't roll him over. And it's like, you can still pet him if you want. Just like, you very clearly can't get him to facilitate that.
This volume is filled with, like, silly standout panels. Like, the goofy panel in chapter 17 where Chika is imitating Osama, so she's pretending to have glasses with her hands. It's like a neat little kid thing to do.
I wonder if I do that with my hands, that Shiori will accept me as an honorary glasses club citizen.
Oh, is it time for your section where you... talk about the
Ashihara comments corner? Why, yes, it is. There's that detail on a box. How she's apparently the female character, one of the female characters he has the most fun drawing. I don't blame him. I like the detail that earlier Ashiyama doesn't quite fit his current personality, but I'd still say it's a bit more distinct than his very Jin-like design. So it's a bit of a trade-off.
Yeah, I don't know what the idea was to make him just recolored Jin. How is this an improvement?
Yeah, I like that Jin's the whole reason for Jin's open jacket is so that it can flap in the wind. It's Ashihara clearly loves that aesthetic because he does that with the bagworm and with Miwa's scarf. I like the detail in Yotaro Rindo's little bio where it's like, his likes include girls riding Raijin Maru. It's like, bless him, he just wants to get a date that's passionate about his pet, and that's cute.
I love Narasaka's description, the handsome artsy type. He looks like he'd be at home playing the piano or bass guitar.
Also, Ashihara makes comments on the family that Yuma was friends with in his backstory, and he says, talks about Izukatcha. He's like, a bust like hers at her age is a comment that his editor made. I'm like, God, there's all those stories about the Jump editorial being quite a boys' club, and just the fact that he is a fairly tasteful mangaka, but his editor is just making all of these really... horn dog comments about, I think this character was like 13. It does kind of speak to that, which is, yeah, not great.
I was thinking he was sending it to have a change, but what you say makes a lot more sense, considering what happened to Kitora.
Yeah, the alternate chapters 2 and 3 was interesting. It featured these mean B rankers picking on Yuma, who he obviously completely trounced, and it was scrapped because Ashihara felt it was information overload. So take notes, Samurai 8. This is how you do it. For those who don't know, Samurai 8 is the recent failed second series of Masashi Kishimoto, the Naruto mangaka, and neither of us are huge on the sheer amount. It's going for a big high concept sci-fi, but it dumps so much exposition at you in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, just read World Trigger.
Yeah.
It's fine. You see, my thoughts on the rejected storyboard, I was thinking, oh, okay, so that's the reason why the Haha brothers appear again at school and Yuma has to teach them a lesson again.
Yeah, they repurpose it to be like, okay, they're just schoolmates, so we didn't have to exposition dump excessively where it wasn't necessary. So, yeah, good change. Kirie being Arashiyama's cousin is interesting. It's another one of those. It's like Yonaya and Shiori. It would be, I guess, maybe it's informing this idea that it's either quite a small city or just the fact that people whose relatives get into border tend to get into border as well.
It totally makes sense since she also has the little strand of hair that looks like a feather.
I also find it very interesting that that Konami is one of the earliest members of Border, not of Border, but of Tamakoma branch. Like she's the most senior member besides Rindo. I think it said in the volume extras. I'd also completely forgot that Shiori has been to the other worlds. That's an interesting detail. It's something that I don't really think about much with World Trigger, the fact that like any A rankers and like operators that are affiliated with A ranker teams could have gone to these other worlds, because it's all very much been based here. So it's an angle I don't consider much.
I forgot about the saying that Border was supposed to be a bridge between worlds, just like the Avatar. And since Osamu likes bridges, he'd be good friends with Aang. Miwa would just be, I must capture the neighbor to restore my honor.
That's a very interesting impression of Zuko.
Yeah, I made Miwa southern for some reason last episode.
Of course. Yeah, no, I'm remembering the jokes are compiling onto each other. Other minor details. Kazuma being older than Tachikawa really screws with me. It's just like, I see, like, the fact that Kachikawa has a soul patch is just like, oh, he's like 25 or something. That's 20. That's like older dude in older young dude in manga years. But
also, since Shiori has a tendency to like nickname her squad and stuff, what's her old nickname for Soya Kazama Soy Boy?
I hope not. I really hope she's not that way inclined with her insults, but
it is my headcanon since what we find out about Shiori, she is a still reforming conservative.
A reforming right-leaning shitposter. I have a few friends like that, so I can respect that. The exercise benefiting the Treon body, but not like in a pure muscles equals power sense, is quite interesting. Reiji's old training in chapter 25.
I'm sorry, what's his name? What's his name?
Reiji.
No, what's his name?
Composed Beefcake.
That's right.
See, first Jin makes me nervous, and then it's Composed Beefcake. Hovin-chan is very overwhelmed by all these hot anime dudes. I think we get a really good sense of Jin and Tachikawa's rivalry, even though they've only interacted a bit. And obviously you get the parallels drawn by Miwa.
I wonder if Tachikawa should be Iroh. He's kind of behaving like Miwa's lazy uncle.
God damn it, uncle. We can't track down the Avatar too quickly. That sounds like the opposite of what it would be. Kinuta's face has finally reached its wide form that we all know and love. Although it does continue to get wider and fatter as the series goes on. Maybe a conscious choice, maybe just like all of the ruckus that Tamakoma is causing is just making him stress eat or something.
Yeah, and the divorce.
And the divorce, yeah. There was a really funny transition, which is the like Jin being like, they'll take the trivia, and then it's just Kinoda being like, the question is how, slams fist down. I love that very direct follow up on what the person in the other scene is saying.
So some of my other standout panels. First of all, I like when I really like the sequence where Scruffy Hottie, just thinking of something positive to say about Osamu for three panels straight in the same pose, with Osamu getting more and more sweaty. I have high hopes for the future.
Yes. This is one thing that I've been interesting. The end of volume cliffhangers have been especially strong for us so far. I feel like they've always ended off in a good point. Like last volume, we had the reveal that they want, you know, the HQ want to get back that Black Trigger and are prepared to go on the offensive. And then in this volume, we had the Conserva Squad and Jin's Alliance squaring off. It's not gonna be like that forever, because A lot of the time, these volumes aren't really, the chapters aren't really written with the volumes in mind. They're just a continuous stream of things that are later compiled. So we'll see how our luck keeps up with that.
You see, I thought that a better way for the volume to end would be like Tamakoma 2's decision to form the squad, and starting from now, you are a unit, and so on.
The absolute unit. I can see that. I also think, like, setting up a really cool fight is a good way to leave a volume off at the same time. So, yeah.
Another thing, I really like the panel layout on the two pages when Jin refuses the kiddo's order. So the panel ordering is kind of uncertain as it cuts between the two scenes, and Jin's scene and Yuma and Chica's. But it's also kind of surrounded by Jin's scene as you kind of see his presence and what a threat it would be to Yuma if he decided to go with the order. I also like how Yuma was just wrong in thinking his dad wasn't in Border. It's just what you said last time, that they are both very good protagonists with Osamu, that neither of them has all the information, and they can be wrong, and they have to figure out things on their own and from each other.
Yeah. So I think this pretty much covers all of the little details I have about this volume.
Oh my god, is it true? I have more random observations than you.
Yeah, you do. This is unprecedented.
This is very exciting. Okay, apparently in the neighborhood, they also have soldiers who don't use triggers, which is, I thought it was an interesting detail. And also another one, back in the battle, in the flashback, Yuma also had a black Border uniform. There was the logo and stuff, and it was very, very similar to the C-rank uniform that he... It's just a minor spoiler, he's going to wear later.
Yeah.
I also didn't remember that Yuma's lie detector side effect was inherited. I thought it was his own, but apparently he inherited it with the black trigger. I forgot about also that we find out this early on that Tamakoma's engineer was a neighbor. Interesting that we got it this early on.
Okay.
So I guess, is it time for Spoiler Corner?
Spoiler Corner and the Q&A segment, which I don't have any, like, pure spoilerific observations for this volume, so for me it's just my question answers.
Yeah, totally. So let's go ahead with the first question. The first two questions are from the previous thread, Zone League on Reddit, asks, can you all imagine any new combat uses for Trion? I totally forgot that the triggers are also to kind of create space in a kind of Time Lord technology kind of way. Just as you make, like, training spaces with Trion, I think it would be nice if you had, like, Trion pouches or Trion backpacks that you could hide an inordinate amount of things in. I don't know how difficult they would be to pick up, how heavy they would be then, but I suppose Trion could do something about that.
I mean, I guess, like, for anyone who's, like, paraplegic or, like, physically disabled in some way, Trion bodies could be a really good long-term, like, way for people to get around. So there's that usage.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like the highest levels of technology shouldn't be reserved for military organizations, but for healthcare. But anyway, Zone League also asks, how effective would Narsa's Viper techniques be on enemy territory?
I think, well, we don't know much about what the given enemy territory will look like. I'm assuming he means the Naval Worlds here. But if it's a stronghold like the one in the Yuma flashback, I'd say that would be a really good location for it, because you have loads of those very narrow bridges where she can easily, like, crowd someone with the mass projectiles and, like, isolate them.
Totally. For, like, open spaces, one that requires less manipulation but is more equipped with power, like Chica's, would probably be better. And it's an interesting question, since it kind of predicts that maybe some agents will have to, like, adjust a lot of the fighting styles to, from, like, controlled rank wars to, and from, like, Mikado City defense to, like, offense, in which it might be a lot more different. So it makes me happy, since a lot of the characters we know are still going to have underdog status, at least the ones that haven't visited the neighbor worlds before. Anyway, Sandcastle 112 says, what do you guys anticipate about the next plot? And I don't really know how to interpret that.
I guess I've just put that down as, like, general predictions of things that could happen, in a very vague terms. After reading this volume, I really like the idea of Yuma and Jin both using their black triggers in conjunction, as, like, a callback to Yugo and Megami. I don't know how on-the-nose shonen cheese Ashihara would want to go with it, but you could go full ham of like, we're continuing their wills or something like that. On the away wish mission, the group could get separated or stranded if they wanted to have some bumps in the road. I like the idea of Osamu and Shinomiya teaming up, since they were such heated rivals. What? Ninomiya teaming up.
Oh, Shinomiya from Food Wars. Oh, great. Rank Wars. Shokugeki no Yuma.
Shiori's like, yeah, Grasses Squad, let's go! Osamu and Ninomiya teaming up because they've been very... he's been the big rival throughout the rank wars, so it'd be cool to see them put their brains together. Another possible rupture between border factions, since things are very uneasy, could be interesting. And also, I reckon they're going to run into that creature that killed Yugo. I guess, yeah. And another potentially interesting thing is, if there are any character deaths, potentially getting more high-level people, or just people in general, black triggers. Because Tachikawa doesn't have one, does he?
No, he doesn't.
So imagine what he'd be like with one. Yeah, like, geez.
I would like, for the immediate next story, I would like Akane to have a tearful goodbye with Chika and all the snipers.
All right.
Next question, AJ Run, also on Reddit. Favorite characters, and who do you want to see more of?
Obviously, Akoma and Shiori are my favorite. We've gone over that. But in terms of characters I want to see more of, they probably wouldn't fit the bill for that, because they have had a lot of screen of focus. Whereas I feel like characters like Yuzuru and Kakizaki, who are both characters that I like a lot and have plenty of room to go in the story and haven't had the most focus, I'd love to see more of them. Also just backstories for any border character. Relevant to this volume, I think I mentioned earlier, Shiori and Konami, I feel like there's a lot of very interesting stuff you can delve into with them. They're both like teenagers, so how old were they when they joined? What was it like there? Getting their first grips on how to be their respective roles.
You see, I would very much like to see more of Shiori, especially more like operators being specifically involved in the rank war battles and importance put upon them more at least than just a throwaway line in one match. In the Facebook group World Trigger Official Worldwide, Zell Zero asks. And my question is, what do you think of the Katori squad now that they have learned a bit about the whole team?
Yeah, they're still not exactly my favourite squad, but I am glad that Yoko has shown some growth, and I think they were a good inverse to Osamu's team in their first fight. But geez, someone give poor Wakamura a back rub. He's just stressing out like crazy. That lad needs a bit of help. And Miura is just vibing, so good for him. Also, Yoko has cool hair.
You see, it's probably one of my favorite squads, but because it's so fucking dysfunctional. It's very interesting to see coming from World Trigger, in which most of the squads are like very in sync. I still think they're a lot more toxic than the story would lead us to believe. It's portraying a bit of growth from Katori, but I guess then not changing her personality completely, because that would be stupid. But
it's very much the Bakugo approach of like a lot of those toxic traits are still there and don't just go away right away. But then it sometimes the story is unclear on what should be considered the bad traits.
The fact that I'm sometimes going to listen to you, but also be very passive aggressive about it. I'm wondering if it works for Bakugo for me more because he's a main character. I don't know. I find Katori and the rest very interesting, but there's something off about the framing that I just find weird.
Sure. Jack goes into it, yeah. Yoko does have maybe the coolest hair of any World Trigger character, so she has that going for her.
And I guess that's the last question, so yeah, we can do the outro. Alright, so this was the third episode of Duckface Diaries. Thank you very much for watching, for listening. You can find our podcast on anchor.fm/wensleydalecheddar. That's where all the links are. You can find us on youtube.com/c/wensleydalecheddar. And all the other podcasting platforms, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Breaker, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, and probably something else, because I don't know. I've only recently figured out that Anchor has also created a Podbean account for us, but without our knowledge. It's weird, but all the links are in the description below on YouTube or on Anchor. Hoven, where can people find you?
You can find me at Hoven with an H on Twitter, and I am Hoven with an H on YouTube. I have my podcast, Hoven's Hideaway, which we recently did. It's a sort of miscellaneous, mostly manga discussion podcast, and we recently did an ending discussing an ending. We recently did an episode discussing the ending of the controversial jump series The Promised Neverland, which is also on anchor.fm. We can link that.
/ Hoven's Hideaway.
And, which an episode has been featured on an excerpt from which has been featured on Wensleydale's channel. So, yeah, hoping to put more content out there soon.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I very much enjoy being on that. Also, you can find me on Twitter at WensleyCheddar, and you can find our podcast Twitter at Duckface Diaries. I've recently created that. I don't know whether gain any following or anything.
Or I could just use it to post, like, endless GIFs of Shiori. That works.
That works as well. I forgot to mention, and I feel silly for not mentioning that, since a lot of people that have responded very positively about our podcast mentioned that came here from Mongo Mavericks, who actually shouted us out in the episode before the last that recently released. So yeah, go check out Mongo Mavericks at Mongo_Mavericks on Twitter. I've been on the World Trigger podcast, actually, so check out that feature.
Yeah, I might have a future podcast appearance, but I don't think it'll be wise for me to plug it, given that it's not happened yet. So, next episode, I will give him a shout-out.
Haven't you been on the We Never Learn episode?
Oh, yeah, no. Oh, I meant a different podcast, but yeah, no, I have been on Manga Mavericks' We Never Learn episode, so do check that one out.
Yeah.
And check out all of their stuff.
Totally. And if you'd like to help us keep the show going, if you'd like to help me upload either Manga Mosaic or Duckface Diaries on a regular basis, consider supporting me on patreon.com/WensleydaleCheddar. At the $1 tier, you can get a shout-out and your name in the credits, and at the $3 tier, you get to request a series to be reviewed on the Manga Mosaic podcast. At the $6 tier, I'll draw you a World Trigger Duckface avatar like we have here on YouTube. At the $12 tier, you get access to the show notes, and at the $25 tier, you can request a series to be covered on a long-form video essay. I don't know why you would, but it's there. Each tier comes with a monthly manga thread or a bonus podcast covering Pokemon Sun and Moon, Platinum End, Assassination Classroom, Tokyo Ghoul, and Siren, respectively. Help us reach goals such as reviving World Trigger Bridge or a Demon Slayer video essay. Send us emails, questions, comments, suggestions at wensleydale012@gmail.com. Anything else to throw out there?
Next time we'll be covering Volume 4, which covers chapters 26 to 34 of the manga, and can also be covered in episodes 14 to 17 of the anime. Yeah, you guys are getting a nice normal 4 episodes again, like usual. Make sure to send us subscribers so we can deal with the Conserva Squad podcasts.
This was the third episode of Duckface Diaries, and as always, it's time to
bugger off!